The door opened to reveal that it was now dusk.
Hey now, looks like it's nearly night. Maybe we'll find us some critters out in the dark that we could chill on the way home. Maybe give us a chance to get some fresh meat in the pot.
They'd had no indication of a vill on their previous journey through the territory surrounding the redoubt, and nothing to show that there were any wags hidden away on their way back.
How far have we got to go? I don't know how much more Doc can take. Ryan should be okay, but Doc's lost a lot of blood. And have you got a name?
The fat man led them out of the shallow valley and around to the rear of the redoubt entrance. The soil had been scoured so thin by the elements that the concrete lining the redoubt tunnel was visible, like bone, through parts of the incline.
You could call me Boss. Boss Buckley. The Buckley's been the mainstay of Nagasaki since before the nuke caused. We're the ones keep the whole fucker going in more ways than one.
The name was familiar to Christy. Nagasaki was something she had heard of back in Harmony. Something to do with the times before the nuke cost and when the nukes first began. It had some kind of symbolic meaning that she couldn't recall. But how did it get to be the name of some pesthole ville full of inbreds? Mildred remembered only too well the dark shadow of nuclear warfare under which her generation had been raised and which they had helped reach fruition. The pictures and old news footage she had seen back before she was frozen flickered through her memory. Buckley stopped by a small gathering of scrub. Jack marveled at the ingenuity of the camouflage. Under Buckley's direction, some of the inbreds moved the scrub. It formed a screen over a pit about 4 feet in depth, some 20 feet in length, and about 12 feet in breadth. Within this were two wags, each hitched to two sickly and weak-looking mules. Two of the inbreds coaxed the mules up out of the pit.
We all can't fit into those.
We don't have to. We always hide our mules and wags like this, so any passing convoy don't get wind of this special place. Couldn't dig that deep and wide without it looking strange, but we take it in turns. Some of us walk, others ride, then we change around again. Ain't perfect, but then again, what is now? Leastways, all of us gets to rest up some on the way back.
With the mules and wags now on the flat, Doc and Ryan were loaded on one, with Mildred, Christy, and Jack on the other. They were given first chance to rest, while some of the inbreds mounted around them. The others walked by the side of the wags. They headed to the south. Mildred and Christy found themselves falling into intermittent sleep. Only Jack remained alert, not trusting to fall asleep while the others also dozed. The journey took all night. The sun was rising and the companions were now walking beside the wags when Buckley pointed ahead.
Nagasaki!
Mildred looked ahead at the low gathering of ramshackle huts and ruined buildings that constituted the vill. She despaired of being able to tend to Ryan and Doc in such circumstances. Even from this distance, it seemed to be a pest hole, and as the wags trundled nearer, her worst impressions were confirmed. Most of the population of Nagasaki seemed to have followed Buckley on the trip to the redoubt, for there were only a few older people coming from the dirty, collapsing buildings to greet them. There were a few animals, a couple of pigs, some chickens, and something that may have been a goat of some kind, wandering through the mud that constituted the streets of the ville. In truth, ville was too grand a description for this collection of ruins. It was more like a series of huts that had been built around a couple of old pre-dark ranch houses. The straggling dwellers came out to the war party, and the companions could see that they were as badly deformed as the others, merely younger or older. Even the animals looked inbred. The wags pulled up in the middle of the cluster of dwellings. To the rear of the main ranch house, Mildred could see that an old barn had been rebuilt. It looked as though the old structure had been reinforced and made secure. A dry moat had been dug around it, with a footbridge connecting the barn to the rest of the surrounding vill.
Hello, the seven!
The other muties lifted the prone figures of Doc and Ryan off the wags. Doc had briefly recovered consciousness, but was now out once more. Ryan was conscious, but weak.
I'm giving you the best that we got so you can get your two men up and running again. You're coming with me. I gets to live in the best place, 'cause I's the leader, and that's the way it's always been. So you follow me, and we'll all meet up later. Yeah?
With a curt nod, Boss Buckley turned and limped away into the old ranch house, followed by the men and women who carried Doc and Ryan. The remaining three companions followed, using the few seconds in the open to try to get a better look at Nagasaki. The huts and the two ranch houses were covered in filth. Sewage seemed to flow into the muddy streets at random. The dwellers who watched them go into the ranch house could all be divided into the tall and thin and the short and fat, obviously the two dominant families in the original settlement. The two things both groups shared were a vacant stare and a slack, open-mouthed look of confusion, their brains scrambled by the small genetic pool. Inside the ranch house, the furnishings were all from the pre-dark era and were battered and filthy. There were tables that had chunks splintered from them, and sofas and chairs that were almost bereft of stuffing, their linen and leather covers in rags and strips. The carpets underfoot were nothing more than loose, colorless fibers that flapped over stone flags, grimy with neglect.
Hey, you get settled in here. Sort out your wounded. We'll meet later.
The new room was as filthy as the others, but had three beds covered with rags that had once been blankets, and mattresses that may at one time have been stuffed. It could have been worse, but not by much. Jack checked the shuttered windows and the door before indicating that it was all right to talk. There were no spies.
What a dump! How the hell can I treat Ryan and Doc in conditions like this?
What the hell have we gotten into? These people are really fucked. One thing's for sure, Buckley's got nothing good in store for us.
Agree with that, but we need to get Doc and Ryan up to fighting speed.
Yeah, but I wish I just had better conditions to work in. It's not exactly sanitary in here.
Ryan had been listening, drifting in and out of sleep. He felt as helpless and weak as a child. Mildred tended to his wound, stripping the material from the congealed blood around his arm and cleaning it with old antiseptic that she took from the supplies she kept in her med bag. Fortunately, it was only a flesh wound and the bullet had passed directly through. She applied a dressing.
I wish we'd either had time to see if there were any medical supplies left in the redoubt or found a ville with decent facilities. You've lost a lot of blood. There's no major damage, but you're not going to be back to full strength for a couple of days.
Whatever this Buckley's got in mind for us, whatever we're going to have to do, that's the last thing I wanted to hear.
You could be Doc.
He's in a mess.
While Mildred had been attending to Ryan, the red-haired woman made a start on preparing Doc for treatment. Christy stripped him of his coat and cut away the arm of his shirt, then peeled back the matted and congealed cloth to reveal the wound in his shoulder. The SMG shell had ripped through the flesh just above the bone, exposing the whiteness, but fortunately not splintering it. It was a deep gouge. The adrenaline rush of combat had kept him upright, but the wound had been deep enough to cause a vast amount of bleeding. Mildred painstakingly cleaned the wound and tried to dress it, aided by Christy. Doc was beginning to regain consciousness as the wound was cleaned. Mildred dressed the wound as best she could, but Doc was a real cause for concern. He would be unable to defend himself adequately for some time, and his shoulder might never be quite the same again. She couldn't be sure with these facilities, but some of the tendon and muscle around the shoulder joint might have been damaged.
Shit, shit, shit! I just hope the old buzzard can get through this.
My dear doctor, I am alive. This puts me ahead of the game, I would say.
After attending to the minor abrasions and cuts on herself and the others, Mildred sat back. Now they had to wait until Buckley came back for them, and find out what exactly the Ville Chief had in store for them.
You think we'll get some food and water?
Looks to me like they have enough trouble even feeding themselves. Did you see any farming or livestock?
Only those weird, muty-looking creatures. I'd have to be starving to go near them.
Then how did they eat?
In the semi-darkness of the shuttered room, time passed slowly. Eventually, Buckley came to them. The room was now almost dark, the light seeping through the shutters down to nothing as night began to fall. As the chief of the small Pestholeville threw back the door, The companions might have seemed at first glance to be relaxed, but all were poised. The fact that Buckley hadn't stripped them of their weapons suggested that he meant no harm, but a person could never be certain.
Hey now, how y'all feeling? You feeling better? 'Cause we're gonna eat and talk about getting some convoy shit. See, I figure you're gonna be a lot of help.
Even with two of us operating injured?
Doc was sitting up, but anything other than gradual movement was still difficult, even though the rest had allowed him to regain some strength.
Hell yeah! Don't you worry none about that. But first, we gotta introduce you properly to everyone. See, we don't have many strangers around here, and it'll help to let everyone know who you are, what you're doing here, you see.
Since they really had no choice, they followed Buckley and his two guards along the corridor into the main room of the ranch house. There was food on the table, a stew pot covered in the crusted remains of previous meals, filled with something indistinguishable, and pitchers of water that looked less than clean. Despite their hunger and thirst, there was no great enthusiasm stirring among the companions.
The others told me that this is called Nagasaki. That's a strange name for a villa around here.
Buckley looked at Ryan suspiciously.
Didn't know that you knew about around here. But you're right, it is an unusual name. Given to us by those who come before. They knew, you see, about what was going down. Look, see if this don't tell you.
They followed him down a side passage until they reached a closed and locked door. He took a key from a leather pouch around his neck.
Now this is real important. I get to keep the key because I'm the leader, and it's handed down. See, the ones who came before started this place because they knew what was coming. Not many gets to see in here. It's a real treat, I'm telling you.
With great reverence, Buckley opened the door. Inside, the room smelled musty and close, as though the doors and windows were always shut. Buckley lit an oil lamp, and the growing light threw shadows across the room, revealing the secrets that were held within.
Sweet mother.
The walls were plastered with photographs. Some prints, some taken from newspapers and magazines, yellowing and fraying. They showed victims of the first atomic bombs at Nagasaki and Hiroshima. A banner hung over a desk in the far corner of the room, proclaiming this to be the head office of Nagasaki, the first church of the bomb.
I heard about people like this, Christy. They figured a bomb was coming, so they built sanctuaries and worshipped it like it was going to be a cleansing fire. They thought it'd get rid of anyone not like them. Guess they found out the hard way that it fucked everybody.
Come on, people. Let's get you introduced to the others.
Buckley led the companions back out of the squalid ranch house and into the more squalid patch of earth that passed for the Ville Square. In truth, it was little more than an area of mud that hadn't been covered with a shack. Buckley was still flanked by the two Ville dwellers. Ryan noted that Buckley had been careful to lock the door once more as they left, and it was obvious that the contents of the room, as exciting as they were to these people, were only to be gazed upon at certain times. As they followed Buckley and his two men, each of the companions wondered what lay in store. Buckley was obviously at ease with letting them walk unguarded. He saw them as no threat on his own turf, even though they were still armed. The problem was, he was right. Jack looked back at Ryan, who was moving slowly, although clearly stronger than a few hours earlier, and then at Doc, who was being assisted by Mildred. Both men were in no fit state to fight, and as the other three wouldn't leave them, and even an inbred like Buckley could see this, then they were effectively trapped here until recovery. To fight would accomplish nothing. Christy was trying not to show it, but she felt great danger. In the fading light, with oil lamps and torches, flames flickering from the pitch that fueled them, the group of people who constituted the Ville of Nagasaki seemed even more sinister and deformed. The shadows did little to improve their resemblance to anything human. Mildred suppressed a shudder as they stepped out in front of the Ville dwellers. Ryan, assuming a more practical attitude, noted that all of the people were still armed. There seemed to be no formal sect force as such in this Pestilville. Everyone seemed to act as sect when necessary. Was this because they were united, or because they didn't trust one another, or both? Buckley held up his arms to silence the gathering.
So I guess y'all know why it's called y'all here now. And that's why I'm talking a little slower for the benefit of our new friends that we found today. And he's gonna help us in getting some good new shit from the convoys that's coming through in the next day or two. Now we know which way, and we know kind of when, but what we need is someone who won't stand out like we does. Which is where these new folks come into things. Now what we're gonna do is give y'all a chance to help look after these folks. Equal shares for all in all things. That's what I says. But now, if you do any damage to these new folks and they can't help us on tomorrow's, then y'all gonna pay big time. Am I right about that? Am I right? All right.
This didn't sound good. The companions would be split up and at the mercy of whoever they were billeted with, unable to fight if need be, because they had to worry about what would happen to the others if they did.
Chief, we can stick together. We'll be less of a problem to you that way.
No, Bonite, it just ain't that easy. We ain't had anyone from outside with us for a long time, and well, I guess we gotta have our fun, too. Now, we ain't gonna hurt you. Excuse me. All right, all y'all go about your business now.
The Ville Chief led the companions back inside. All they could do was exchange glances. Even with their weapons, attack would have been futile at this point. They were in the center of enemy territory, outnumbered, and in a weakened state. They just had to roll with it.
Now y'all get to eating. You'll be needing to build your strength for what we'll be doing.
Buckley gestured to the table where a rancid stew lay cooling. None of the companions felt that hungry when faced with the slop, but they hadn't eaten for some time. At one time, whoever started this community had some decent silverware that was probably used only on special occasions. But it was in pretty bad shape now. The food was nearly inedible, greasy, fatty lumps of indeterminate meat floating in a thin gruel thickened with something that may have been maize. There were also some tough, fibrous, unidentifiable vegetables thrown in. Chunks of the crust that had gathered around the lip of the pot broke off and fell in. They ate in silence. Mildred had to try very hard to keep her meal down, feeling it press at the back of her throat.
Well, what y'all think of it?
That was inedible muck, and there wasn't enough of it.
Well, shit, you are some strange fuckers, ain't y'all?
Buckley pushed himself back from the table and stood up, his vast girth wobbling.
I guess it's time we got y'all farmed out for the night. Now, y'all remember, you can hit back if you have to. We ain't gonna hold it against you if you do. It can get a bit hot in the nighttime.
The fat chief lumbered out with his guards, leaving the companions to follow. Outside, in the cool night air, they shivered, but not just because of the sudden chill as they stepped from the ranch house. They passed a hut that had no covers on the open window. Looking in, they had a vision of hell that was no more or less frightening than the photographs in the locked room. Inside the hut, lit by the flickering of an oil lamp, were a woman and two men. All of them were short and fat, their faces covered in warts. And as all three were now naked, it was clear that it wasn't just their faces that were covered in warts and carbuncles.
I do like peoples and knows how to enjoy themselves.
Besides the obvious rutting going on in the various huts of the ville, there was a gathering of about a dozen people near the dry-moated barn. They had formed a circle and were carrying torches of flaming pitch.
Oh, shit! You never told me there was a fight!
It seemed a strange comment, as none of the companions could actually recall either of the guards uttering a word.
Come on! It should be good!
Buckley hurried to join the small circle. His guards hurried after him, leaving the companions behind.
What the hell is going on here? Are they all stupid or just crazy?
Too much inbreeding. Face it, they're all related several times over. We're in big trouble, people. There's no way we can tell how they're gonna act.
Just keep ready and blast it a hand.
We can't take them all on. We're one down and two wounded. I don't know about Doc, but I'm still not on top of my game.
My dear Ryan, I feel like I'm on the bottom being trampled.
Okay. We don't have any choice but to go along with Buckley. You heard what he said. If they get a little feisty, we can defend ourselves.
Yeah, he says that now. But what if it actually comes to the test?
Get your asses over here! You're missing the fun!
As the companions got nearer, the circle parted slightly, allowing them a view of what was going on.
He's playing crow. Watch this.
In the middle of the circle, warily padding around each other, were a man and a woman. The woman was short and fat, with warts and carbuncles. She had her black hair tied back and was carrying a leather cat o' nine tails. Her opponent was tall and thin and carried a length of wood with nails banged through it. He had one eye, his right socket being a mass of scarred flesh, but with no hole where an eyeball could possibly have sat. The scar also puckered the corner of his mouth into what looked like a sardonic smile. They were both slicked with a film of sweat and blood. They had obviously been fighting for some while, and the cat had scored the man's flesh, raising ugly red welts that spurted beads of blood, as well as weeping sores opened on his back where old wounds had been restruck. The woman was also injured. Her stomach and back were raked with deep cuts from the dragging nails, the blood flowing freely. From his defensive stance and her aggressive passes with the cat as they circled, it was clear who was now taking the initiative. The woman sidestepped a swinging blow from the man, surprisingly agile considering her size, and as he stumbled past her, the knotted leather thongs of the cat scored into the skin on his back. He stumbled and fell in the mud, rolling to come up on his feet and parry another blow from the cat with his stick. The leather thongs wrapped around the stick, and with a tug, the woman pulled it out of his hand. The stick flew out of the circle and over the heads of those gathered. But the few moments it took the thongs to unravel from the nailed wood gave the man the time he needed to attack. Head down, he launched himself at the woman while her stance was open, her torso exposed as the momentum of the cat flung her arm back. The woman's considerable bulk trembled as she absorbed the impact of his headbutt, and she stumbled backward before finally losing her balance and sprawling in the mud. The man was now on top of her, and he pinned her arms back over her head. She raised her head sharply and butted him in the area where his nose should have been. She used this opportunity to buck her hips beneath him, the immense power in them throwing him off. As he lay on his back, the woman scrambled to her feet and stood over him. Their weapons were now forgotten, as was the idea of fighting. Despite the pain he had to be suffering, the man had sprouted an erection while he straddled her. Her eyes now fixed on it, and before he had the chance to move, she had positioned herself over him, squatting down on her haunches suddenly so that he was impaled in her. She began to ride him enthusiastically, the blood and sweat on their bodies mixed into a kind of war paint that glowed and glistened as they moved in the torchlight. It was a bizarre, savage spectacle, yet one from which the companions could not tear their eyes.
I recall reading, it seems so long ago, about rites and ceremonies that involved such fornication and savagery among what we laughingly termed primitive peoples. But to witness it, it seems truly to be the more things change,
the more they stay the same. I know what you mean, Doc.
Shit, I don't know about any a day. I just know that these be harder fuckers than they look if we have to fight them again.
Yeah, and we're not in any way ready to fight.
We may have to be.
Although there were many awful sights Christy had seen in her life, this ranked with the worst. Buckley turned to the companions.
Oh, yeah! Let's get your blood afire. Don't it just do it? This will mean that we'll be ready when the time comes.
When is that? You keep talking about a convoy, but what...
That ain't your problem, will I? That's my problem. First, y'all gotta get some rest so you'll be ready, right? And that's what I'm sorting out for y'all right damn now.
The Vill Chief turned back to the group around the rutting couple.
Finish it!
Behind the crowd, the fat woman and the tall man finished their rutting, and she pulled herself up from him, leaving him lying limp and exhausted while she waddled over to the others. She gazed straight at Ryan, a hideous grin splitting her wart-covered face.
Well, I guess that settles that one. You'll be staying with Mags. She'll look after you. Hey, Blackie, you'll be with Psy D and Mal.
Pointing at Mildred, Buckley indicated the three they had earlier glimpsed through a window, who had now wandered out to join the crowd. The way they looked at her made her skin crawl. Meanwhile, Doc and Jack had been assigned to their own billets, and the chief saved the best for last. He turned to Christy.
Now, as for you, Ren, I think you'll be safest with me.
The companions exchanged glances. There was nothing they could do to stop their being separated, as Buckley held all the cards. They were weak, outnumbered, and had to play along until they had a chance to recoup and run. The hungry and curious looks on the faces of the crowd around them spoke of a hard night ahead. Unconsciously, all the companions fingered their weapons. But they were surrounded in unknown territory, and the chances of blasting their way out were minimal. The only choice that gave them some kind of option for maneuver was to go along with Buckley, split up, and try to make it until sunup. It wasn't an option any of them would openly embrace.